kilometers lower. The thread, nonetheless, was still 20,000 kilometers long, and that meant that the top kilometer of thread was under quite shocking tension from the dead weight of the 19,000 kilometers of thread below it. The thread was hollow, the walls a lattice of piezo-electrically reinforced hyperdiamond, but the weight of it, I had heard, was still close to 20 million tons. Every time I made a footfall as I moved around the compartment, I thought of the tiny additional stress my motion was imparting to the thread. Sipping my guindado, I wondered how close to its breaking strain the thread was engineered, how much tolerance the engineers built into the system. Then a more rational part of my mind reminded me that the thread was carrying only a tiny fraction of the traffic it could handle. I stepped with more confidence around the picture window. I wondered if Ryvich was calm enough to take a drink now. The view should have been spectacular, but even where night had yet to fall, the peninsula was hidden under a blanket of monsoon cloud. Since the world huddled close to Swan in its orbit, monsoon season came once every 100 days or so, lasting no more than 10 or 15 days each short year. Above the sharply curved horizon, the sky had darkened through shades of blue towards a deep navy. I could see bright stars now, and overhead lay the single fixed star of the orbital station at the high end of the thread, still a long way above us. I considered sleeping for a few hours, my soldiering years having given me an almost animal ability to snap into a state of total alertness. I swirled what remained of the drink and took another sip. Now that I had made up my mind, I felt fatigue rushing over me like a dam burst. It was always there, waiting for the slightest relaxation of my guard. "Sir?" I flinched again, only slightly this time, for I recognized the voice of the servitor. The machine's cultured voice continued, "Sir, there is a call for you from the surface. I can have it sent through to your quarters, or you may view it here." I thought about going back to my room, but it was a shame to lose the view. "Put it through," I said, "but terminate the call should anyone else start coming up the stairs." "Very well, sir." Detailing, of course. It had to be. He wouldn't have had time to get back to the reptile house, although by my estimate he should have been about 2/3 of the way there. A shade early for him to try and contact me, and I hadn't expected any contact anyway, but it was nothing to feel any anxiety about. But instead, the face and shoulders that appeared in the elevator's window belonged to Red Hand Vasquez. Somewhere in the room a camera must have been capturing me and adjusting my image to make it seem as if we were standing face to face, for he looked me straight in the eye.
"Tanner, listen to me, man."
"I'm listening," I said, wondering if the irritation I felt was obvious in my voice. What was so important that you needed to reach me here, Red?
"Fuck you, Mirabelle. You won't be smiling in about 30 seconds.
But the way he said it made it seem less like a threat than a warning to prepare for bad news. "What is it? Ryvich pulled another fast one on us?"
"I don't know. I had some guys make some more inquiries, and I'm damn sure he's on that thread the way you think he is, a car or two ahead of you."
"Then that isn't why you're calling."
"No. I'm calling because someone's killed Snake."
I answered reflexively, "Detailing?" As if it could be anyone else. Vasquez nodded.
"Yeah. One of my guys found him about an hour ago, but he didn't know who he was dealing with, so it took a while for the news to get back to me."
My mouth seemed to form the words without conscious input from my mind. "Where was he? What had happened?"
"He was in your car, the Wheeler, still parked on Norquinco. You couldn't see there was anyone in it from the street. You had to look inside deliberately. My guy was just checking out the machine. He found Dieterle